Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, Tinky and Tierney, let's go. What's happening? How are you today? We're coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently here on this Tuesday. We're in New York City, but of course, coast to coast, nationwide, 3 hours every single day. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. So I'm sitting there last night, a little ugly the first couple of minutes, trying to plow through the choppiness of the game. Not really deterred. Obviously, I picked the Celtics. It's 23-15, Celtics look bad, not worried. 30-17, Celtics look bad, not worried. 37-18, not worried. Not even really worried when it's 68-53 at the half. Not really worried. Not really worried. Marcus Morris, three early fouls. Not really worried. Jason Tatum not doing anything. Expecting at some point that the Celtics are going to make their run. Because you could tell, even though they were missing shots, even though that, you know, the Cavaliers were vibing, the Cavaliers were a little sloppy with the rock, almost 20 turnovers, and I thought it would lead to a run by the Celtics. We got the run, third quarter, 80-72, cut it to eight, single digits, Jason Tatum getting loose. Here we go, Celtics looking good. And this is why you never know what's happening. Larry Nance Jr. dusted off. And to me, as confident as I was, all the other sequences, the other scores I laid out, when he scored and he made that little flurry, even though there were still 12 minutes of basketball to go, when he had his little flurry in the third quarter, late in my mind, I said, curtains.
Yeah.
Game.
I mean, it's not winning. It's what you talk about, though, BT. It always comes down to the role players, whether it's Clarkson or it's whoever. J.R. Smith, he was making shots early. I mean, look, we knew that LeBron was going to have a day like this. And he, I mean, thank God, if you're a Cavs fan, LeBron did have a day like this where he scored 44, because this game, after feeling at points like it was going to be a blowout, actually got a little bit tight at the end. I mean, it's a testament to two things. One, how good the Boston Celtics actually are, that they could shoot 27%. Those 18 points you were talking about, 27% in the first quarter, and still be in this game as it came down. I mean, the Cavaliers, in theory, I mean, in reality, should have put their foot on the Celtics' throat and choked them out early.
Should have been like game three.
You're right, but they couldn't. I mean, and you talk about Clarkson, but I mean also, I mean Larry Nance Jr., but also Kyle Korver was amazing. I mean, there was a point where he was 4 for 4 in the game, which made him like 9 for 9 over the last two games, and he finally missed one, but it didn't deter you from believing that he was dialed in. And he's the next factor. We saw this earlier against the Indiana Pacers. When he dials in, or when he is dialed in and hustling around like he's a young man, not a 37-year-old sharpshooter, then they're going to win. And they got it that way. Now, the question that I have for you, BT, is because you thought the Boston Celtics would win.
I did.
I was on the fence. I honestly didn't know.
I thought they were going to win.
I honestly had no idea. Now that the Cavaliers have won, we know that Boston still owns home court. That's theoretical. Home court advantage. Do you have still faith that the Boston Celtics are closing out this series? Because I can see this very easily going back to Boston. LeBron James having 38 points. All those role players now dialed in. And the Boston Celtics holding on for dear life, because they cannot win on the road. It's like they are averse to winning on the road. They just start bad. They play well at points, but they fall into these lapses that kills them on the road. It's youth. It's a bunch of – it's also LeBron James, but do you still have faith that Boston Celtics own this series?
Not the amount that I had. I mean, of course, it's going to jar your confidence a little bit. I do believe that the penchant for turning the ball over, and you know that's why I said the Cavaliers had almost 20, because I think when you get to that and you do that in Boston, Boston's not going to let you off the mat.
Yeah.
So I do think that Boston comes back and wins game five. I think.
True, but it was also not. It wasn't just about the turnover.
No, I know.
I mean, some of
missed a lot of layups.
Listen, dunks, BT. It was like 3 or 4.
They missed three. Tatum had two.
I think it was at least three. Maybe it was another one. Missed three dunks.
Brown missed one.
Yeah. And then also, what we have given credit for most of this postseason to the Boston Celtics has been Brad Stevens' ability to coach on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. He kept allowing, now maybe this was his philosophy, but he kept allowing LeBron James to switch on Rozier and Terry Rozier. He had no chance.
No, talked about it all broadcast.
It was only, I think, four buckets or something like that, or three buckets, whatever it was, but it was guaranteed every time that switch happened. If they wanted to get buckets, switch on Terry Rozier, the ball was going down. Now, maybe that was his philosophy. We'll let LeBron do whatever LeBron's going to do. We got to shut everybody else down. But they also didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, this is a Boston Celtics team that if they go into if they have to play on the road or they play like they're on the road at home, they're just not as good as we think they are. But it defies when you see them come back from being down 19 and almost get within single digits of making this a game. So this series is confusing to me.
Yeah, it is.
Because you don't know what you're getting.
Well,
I wouldn't have expected Boston to have a letdown game again on the road, despite what history has told me this postseason so far.
I'd say it's amazing. You look at Larry Nance, I mentioned him before, but you've got to underscore what he did last night again.
Mm-hmm.
That gets mixed in the minutiae of right. The end of the game, or maybe the fourth quarter more so. But again, and I use the term flurry, like he was on the court and all of a sudden things just changed on
right.
a dime.
And he didn't play 10 minutes.
Only played 10 minutes, took 7 shots, hit 5, had 3 rebounds, plus minus, I believe it was plus 10 or at least plus 7. But it's crazy because he played a lot of minutes against the Pacers, right, mm-hmm. in the first round. Against the Raptors, he averaged 4.5 minutes a game. 4.5 minutes a game. And the only reason he's averaged double-figure minutes in the Celtics series is because of the blowout in Game 3. He got 21 minutes of garbage time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he was playing 4 minutes here, 5 minutes here. And, you know, we always talk about Brad Stevens and, you know, what he does, and we try to quantify from a defensive point of view and the way he puts people in certain position. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a little tougher with Tyronn Lue because it's unfair to Ty Lue on some level. I'm not saying he's Pat Riley or Red Auerbach or somebody like that or Phil Jackson, but you know, to go to Larry Nance during a point where, number one, he hasn't earned a whole lot of trust, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. He's rusty, and it's a pivotal point in the game, and to go to him and have him reward you with, you know, an immediate putback and a couple of rebounds and an N1 and a blocked shot, it's like, wow, I think we got to give Tyronn Lue some props
here.
Yeah,
I mean, they were trying to give him some props early on in the game because he was mixing and matching Al Horford with Tristan Thompson. Whenever he'd go in the game, he'd come out. Whenever he'd come back in, he'd come back in. I mean, that was smart because nobody else was defending Horford down on the block. In fact, they had to have LeBron defending him at some point. So you give him some credit, but it's not what you think about when you think about the Cavs. You don't want to credit the coach. You want to credit LeBron.
That doesn't mean it's right, though.
LeBron
coughed it up, what, 8 times last night? How many turnovers? 9?
Yeah.
7? What do you have? 7, right?
He had a bunch.
But that's a lot.
It is. It is.
It's a lot.
When he's handling the ball as much as he had to last night, he did score 44 points, but he wasn't the LeBron that we want to talk about all the time.
This always guy handles the balls a lot.
Doesn't always have
7 turnovers, though.
But we want to talk about LeBron as this facilitator. He only had 3 assists last night. So
a lot of hockey passes, though.
True.
To be fair, a lot of hockey passes. Yeah, I mean, Tinka, I am a little
worried
shaken
about the Celtics
today.
Now?
Because let's face it, I mean, if this holds suit here, Celtics win Game 5, mm-hmm. Cavaliers win Game 6, and am I going to sit down and watch Game 7 and feel great about my pick for the Celtics to win the series with LeBron James, with a LeBron James being in the way for my prediction to be right in a Game 7, winner takes all?
No.
And you can try to measure that against the mystique of the Celtics and the home venue and some of the ghosts, even though it's not fabled Boston Garden. There has been a championship there. There's been a lot of good teams there. A lot of the retired numbers made the trip and all that. But I'll tell you this, you know, I think you hit on something really important. Kyle Korver. And don't forget about George Hill.
Yeah.
You know, those two players shot 10 for 16. And some of the most important plays that Korver made were block shots.
You're right.
And the hustle plays here. If George Hill and Kyle Korver shoot 10 for 16 again, they're going
to win. Right.
They're going to win because LeBron's going to do what he's got to do. Kevin Love's going to be at least in spurts, though. He'll give you something here, something there. Tristan Thompson has played pretty well. He's made a lot of energy plays. I know he's not explosive. He's not going to jump out of the gym. You know, he looks kind of like a 1970s CYO guy. Like, it takes him a long time to gather himself and lay it in. All he needs is,
but
like,
he hustles. He hustles.
Oh, there's no doubt.
There's no doubt about that.
All he needs is knee pads and goggles, and he fits right in on Sunday at the Rec League because he does not play above the rim.
No.
But Tristan Thompson is a good player.
Which is crazy.
Always been good.
It's crazy he doesn't play above the rim because he's enormous. And he catches, he gathers, he goes back up. He's very heavy-footed.
I know.
He can't jump real quick. But he got the start in this game four, and it made a difference in some regards. Maybe it threw Boston off. Who knows? I mean, but at the end of the day, the Boston Celtics now have doubt in their mind about whether or not they were the better team in the series. Because so long we've been saying the Boston Celtics are the better team. And they probably still are. But, I mean, on any given night with LeBron James scoring 44 and with everybody else acting not their age, meaning J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver and some of these old heads that they have on the squad playing aggressively and knocking down shots. Like J.R. Smith hesitated, you know, three from the corner over there that he knocked in. I mean, it was a big play at the moment. And so if those guys are playing like that, it's hard to say Boston is the best team to go forward because it's LeBron. It's hard to bet against them.
You know what I don't want to see at this series because then it would really put my pick in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. But and they mentioned it last night when Morris picked up his third foul.
Yep.
Let him play through it, which is really unorthodox. Mm. I mean, you don't see that at all.
Yeah, but if he goes out, if he fouls out, Marcus Morris fouls out in the third quarter, and because they were going right at him, and at that point he becomes a liability on defense because he's either going to get his fifth foul or he's just going to be a turnstile. It becomes counterproductive. I mean,
I agree. What I'm saying was I would like to see – I mean, Marcus Morris obviously is a good player, but say 2 years from now, Jason Tatum's got even more polish, more muscle. Say if Jason Tatum's got three fouls in the first quarter or three fouls, you know, he picks up number three early in the second quarter. Brad Stevens has shown a penchant to let these players try to work through.
Yeah,
they talked about this on the broadcast.
And he did it, and that's why Morris got his fourth.
But Marcus Morris, while he's good,
he's not
non-expendable.
I hear you.
You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if he would vary the pitch there if it's Tatum or if it's Jalen Brown in 2 years.
Which almost happened, by the way.
Or if it's Kyrie Irving next year.
Yeah.
Or Gordon Hayward next season. It just struck me as interesting.
Yeah,
because,
no,
that is really, really – I don't think I've ever
Kyrie's
seen that.
Kyrie's not going to defend hard enough to get four fouls in third quarter.
Yeah, certainly not in the first quarter. He's not picking up three. But, I mean, have you guys ever seen that? Like a non-goon, for lack of a better description, to get – and, you know, Morris plays tough, but he's not a goon. He's a skilled player. Pick up three fouls that quick and the coach stick with him?
No.
I think I've ever seen that.
No. But that's why Brad Stevens is Brad Stevens. He forces the accountability of these guys. You see it all the time.
But I don't know that it worked last night is what I'm saying. They were down 37-18.
It didn't work because they weren't scoring. Had nothing. I mean, they weren't offensive fouls. They just couldn't. They couldn't put the ball in the bucket, man.
Tatum was pretty bad early. I know
he
got loose a little bit when they cut it to eight in the third quarter when I started to feel pretty good about the comeback, but he missed a lot of easy shots.
He did. I mean, if it wasn't for him getting to the free throw line, I mean, he's probably 2 points at half or in the third quarter. So, yeah, it's youth in the moment on the road. It comes back to get you, and you saw it a little bit. And, again, we just watched some of these highlights. Terry Rozier gets to the right at the basket. He gets rejected by Tristan Thompson. Throw that one down, you know, at home.
That's a great play by Thompson.
But again, remember,
he had the corner on
him. You mentioned this, BT, a week ago at home. He throws that down. You know, he slams it, and LeBron's just hanging behind him. And here he tries to get a little layup in, and he gets thrown away and scored on the other side. So, I mean, there's so many things to point to that why the Cavaliers won this game. The biggest one for me, though, is that Boston just feels young. When they come into critical moments early in this game, and if you get put down by 19 points in the first two periods, it's so hard to come back. I don't care how much of a run you go on. It's just hard to come back.
We want to get a break, but we'll get some phones, obviously, see what you think about last night, what it means the rest of the way. Obviously, Rockets-Warriors will start setting that up. Carl Anthony Towns could be on the trade block. Wow. For the Timberwolves, we'll get to that a little later in the show as well. 855-212-4227. Quickly, though, on the youth, I know that Al Horford spoke about this post-game. Here's what the veteran big man said about his teammates, who are obviously pretty young.
We just keep learning. You know, we haven't been in these type of positions before. And you know, playing on the road, I was telling the guys, they have a better feel, especially in the playoffs. It's much harder. You know, we have to be better. We have to execute better.
Okay. I mean, it's a fair assessment. It's nothing that we don't know, but Horford's obviously a sage voice, and he looks around. He's got to feel a little alone at this point.
Right.
A lot of young bucks that you got to lead to water
and
to drink.
And the problem is they let the Cavs off the hook right now. There's no pressure on the Cavaliers right now. They're not supposed to win game five. I'm just telling you,
LeBron's always got pressure.
Of course, but that's LeBron. And from my seat, sitting here evaluating this game, I'm saying the Cavs, you know, they don't have any – they need to get to game seven. They'll win a game seven. They don't have to win game five. You know what I mean? They don't have to win game five.
I see what you're saying.
The Boston Celtics have to win game five.
Gotcha. I don't disagree with that. I thought you meant big picture there. I mean, Cavaliers, if the Cavaliers get bounced, they're still going to get crushed.
Of course. But I'm talking about
I got you.
In a couple
just
of
the
days.
Sequence of the next couple
next
of games.
Couple of days.
Okay. 855-212-4227. And the other thing is, let's get into this. We were talking about this before the show and try to probe into the mind of LeBron, the intellect, the IQ, the ability to just kind of see what others don't. And, you know, is that an embellishment? I mean, it's, the way it's presented, I'm not saying he's not a basketball genius and a savant, but, you know, it's almost as if, like, other really highly capable, smart minds never existed in basketball. Are we making too much of this? Let's get into LeBron's, the psyche of the great LeBron James. We'll get into that coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
Let's be honest. After a while, you may want to play like you used to, but a couple of years go by. You put some wear and tear on your body, and things just don't quite work the same way they used to. The same thing can be said for your car. After a while, the time and the mileage takes its toll on your brakes. They go soft and don't respond the way that they should. That can be a real problem, not only for you, but for others on the road. So stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts Spring Break event and take advantage of O'Reilly's Do It Right rebate. You'll get a $20 gift card by mail when you buy a set of Brake Best Select pads and a pair of rotors. Your brakes will be as good as new, and you save some real money on quality parts during the O'Reilly Spring Break event. There's a lot of parts on your vehicle more important than your brakes, and aren't more important than your brakes. So drive into the nearest O'Reilly Auto Parts and take advantage of this limited-time event. You'll be glad that you stopped by. Better parts, better prices. Every day.
Okay, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. I got a question. Is anybody else getting a little, not annoyed, because I don't mean this to come across as disrespectful, but a little worn down, a little fatigued? It's like every game LeBron plays, it's a referendum on his career.
A little bit.
Like, we feel the need to reset every historical aspect and how he lines up in this category and who he's chasing and where he's at now and what does this mean and what does that mean? I'll see you in game five is what it means.
The problem is it happens in real time, right? If after the season's over, we reflect upon it, it's one thing. But because you're hearing it, like, right after he makes a jump shot or does something in the middle of a game that you'd rather be worried about that moment, it gets thrown in. And not lost, but it's just weird. I know exactly what you're saying. It's like, why are you telling me that right now? I can't process it. I'm just trying to figure out whether or not they're going to win the game or not.
But it's been like this way for 5 years now.
Yeah, right. Because he's climbing. He's in the conversation of one of the greatest ever. And
we
didn't
do this with Kobe. Kobe's not as good as LeBron. Maybe that's part of it.
Maybe.
But I mean, obviously, that's a subjective statement, but most people share that opinion.
But think about the explosion of media, how we look at it these days, social and otherwise. It was the back end of Kobe. I mean, in the team, the Lakers stunk.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just wasn't playing meaningful, relevant games at the end of his career.
Yep.
I mean, he was still really good, or at least he was injured and had some great games and moments, but just weren't, I don't know, it wasn't part of it. Like, LeBron feels like he's still building upon his legacy, whereas when Kobe, in this new era of consumption of sport, was kind of, you know, hanging on.
I think there's something
fading
to be said for that.
You know
I think that's fair. I think that's a very fair characterization, and I'm pretty sure as we get deeper into Ben Simmons' career and the 76ers improve and they, you know, play deeper into May and, you know, maybe, you know, hopefully for the city of Philly eventually crack through and get something done for the first time since 83, in terms of actually winning the championship, that you'll hear much more about Magic, more so than, well, Magic was 6'9", Ben Simmons is 6'10", they both see the court.
Mm-hmm.
You'll talk about, you know, when Magic started to get a jump shot compared to when Ben Simmons' jump shot begins to infiltrate his game. But I bring this up, Teak, because there's no doubting the intellectual capacity of LeBron. And quite frankly, the ability to process so many different things at once. There's book smarts, there's street smarts, and there's really both. And when you do that, and you can read the room and also read the book, so to speak,
you're
next level, as he so clearly is. But I don't know that, you know, he's on this island of intelligence by himself. Let's not make it seem like he took a life raft out there and he's the only one on the island.
Yeah, he's got the only PhD in the NBA.
Come on.
I know, I hear
you. Larry Bird was the same way.
Yeah, but
so was Magic and so was Michael. Brilliant.
I think with LeBron, because you hear it, it's almost like he goes out of his way to show you how smart he is. And it's fun. It's interesting.
You mean verbal or nonverbal?
Hey, LeBron, tell me about the sequence that happened in the in game two, why you guys lost. And he just runs through like five plays in deep detail and detailing every single pass that they made. It's like he's showing off in some regard. And so you can't help but say, man, that's unbelievable recollection. All right, some people got to go watch film before they can remember what happened in a game that didn't happen. LeBron's got it right there. Like he's got a photographic memory, which he actually may have. You know what I mean?
He might.
And so we know he's ambidextrous. We know it's why he's one of the great scorers from both sides, right and left, because he's just as good of the left hand as with his right hand shooting, not necessarily dribbling. But I mean, it's like he shows it off. That's why we talk about it, because when he gets asked a simple innocuous question that should be given a rote answer, tell us what happened. Oh yeah, we just didn't play great basketball during a stretch, but we came back. He details. He's like, you show it off.
Yeah, but start to turn me off now.
I agree, because it's showing off. Nobody wants to see a show off.
But is it showing off, or is he just really answering the question in a very earnest manner?
Well,
I don't know that he's showing off. Maybe he is indirectly,
here's what I
ask you a question, and you give me a real elaborate, detail-oriented answer. Are you showing off, or are you answering my question?
Now, but here's the thing. Am I genuinely interested in responding to you?
Or, that I can't answer.
Am I annoyed that you're asking the
question? Or am I using you as a prop to basically communicate to the whole world this is how smart I am?
Now here's the thing.
Not the little, peon reporter who asked me the question.
If it's the second one, if I'm annoyed that you're asking me a question because I know that you're trying to write some article about, this is what happened to the Cavaliers, and LeBron says that, whatever. And so in order to screw up your article, or because you're annoying me, I'm going to detail every little bit of factoid that came out of that sequence to the point that you're not even going to understand what the hell I'm talking about.
Would include the minutia.
Exactly. Obviously. So I'm going to give you all this minutia. You think you know basketball, you don't know jack, right? And I'm going to show you that you don't know jack.
Mm-hmm.
So
write this.
How about that, Daddy Mustafa?
Why don't you write this? I don't know. But I tell you, I was thinking about this and some of the names, to me, I mean, there's obviously many different types of basketball intelligence. Like Steve Nash, right?
Yeah.
Steve Nash, to me, the ability to manipulate angles and space on the court for somebody and listen, I do think that he is underrated physically. I mean, he's got a soccer background, so his hand-eye and his hand-foot coordination is superior, which obviously allowed him to keep the dribble and obviously do things. And that second MVP didn't really deserve, but the first one he certainly did. And he's got two. You can't take it away from him. And if the fight doesn't erupt, he probably has a championship as well, and he's perceived very differently. Somebody like Isaiah Thomas. To me, Isaiah Thomas had natural IQ, just in terms of the normal, book-read intelligence, but also there's a savviness that was able to keep some of those combustible pieces like Rodman and Mahorn and all those cats with the bad boys happy and cohesive. Right. Then there's somebody like Reggie Miller who was able to manipulate the referees, whether it was kind of kicking his foot out on a three to get the call or run through a pick and, feign like he really got hit hard when he really didn't and he's getting clutched and grabbed. And that's a different type of intelligence. And I'll tell you what, I don't think Kevin Garnett ever really got full respect outside of those who truly know the game for defensive anticipation, which is also a type of IQ and basketball intelligence. I guess what I'm saying is I'm tired of hearing how smart LeBron James is every single night. I just had to let this out.
Yeah.
Because every night we watch a game, it's like encompassing his entire career. Get me to the next game already. It's 2-2.
Well, it's only because it's happening in real time. And it's like we become obsessed with stats. Right. The only stat that should matter is winning and losing. But we've become obsessed with stats. and you just want to hear them, or at least they want to be delivered to you.
I love stats, but I don't mindlessly deliver them, even though I know them, just for the sake of delivering them.
But they're being delivered in real time as an accent to the game, and it's annoying you. And me too, in some regards.
I don't think we're alone either, by the way.
Agreed, because it's superfluous.
It is.
It makes no sense about what we're talking about.
It's going to connect some dots.
But the fact that that LeBron James became the all-time leading scorer and maker of postseason field goals, why does that matter?
With Kareem.
Right? And why does that matter if... Especially when they kept talking about it.
Oh, listen, you have to. It's Kareem, so you have to reference stat, of course.
But mention it, but don't make it like...
And quite frankly, Teak... That didn't even bother me that much. It's the other. It's just the drivel. It's the inane. And listen, you and I are guilty of this on occasion as well.
Yeah, but we're doing a talk radio show. We're not watching live sport.
And listen, I'm not coming down on the announcers. Like, I mean, it's not just everybody does it. I mean, everybody does it in this land of we've got a show and we've got 8 segments we got to fill. And quite frankly, nothing's happening with Tiger Woods right now, and baseball's not a mainstream sport necessarily. It's more regional. Let's just shove LeBron James down your throat.
Yep.
And then we'll shove Steph Curry down your throat.
Right.
Like, give fans a little more credit for having depth.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And the ability to adapt and go from sport to sport, or at least topic to topic within the sport, rather than regurgitating the same crap every day. Like, it's really... Get a little old now.
Hey, Ack, you want to tell us about Alexander Ovechkin playing Game 7 against the Rays?
Yeah, we don't care. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227. Let's talk about LeBron. 212-4227. Brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Quick way to save money. Switch to GEICO. 15 minutes. Save 15% or more on car insurance. All right, inbounds, out of bounds coming up next. Also, today... We will reveal our grand prize winner, the Tiki and Tierney Def Leppard Journey Contest Giveaway. 10 winners the last couple of weeks. Today, the granddaddy full book trip, room, flight, ticket, San Francisco. That's coming up a little later in the show. So 5 Eastern and 2 Pacific. We'll let you know what's happening with that. And we'll get the tweets. We'll get the calls as well. Listen, I don't know. Maybe what I just said is unique. Maybe you're watching and you're listening and you think I'm nuts and you totally disagree. Hit us up. I don't think we're alone. I just think there's a little fatigue in terms of the constant narration of his career. Set me straight if you have to. We'll get to the calls after Ack. Here's Ack's update. Okay, inbounds, out of bounds, coming up in a sec. Get some calls here on Tiki and Tierney. Hey, by the way, tonight at 10 Eastern here on CBS Sports Network, get the ball rolling with the PBA Tour Finals. All right, son, can I play? As the top 8 bowlers compete for big money and an even bigger title. Only on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports.
You bowl?
Bowling.
You bowl?
Who can't bowl?
What's your greatest bowling score?
I was in a bowling league. I was young, like real young. When you go to Catholic school on Wednesdays, you get out half a day so the public school kids could go and learn. I think it's CCD it's called.
Yep.
So we would get out at 12:30 every Wednesday, and rather than just have us run the park like lunatics and run the neighborhood, they actually started a bowling league. And
I was kind of cool.
It's like, you know,
I throw a baseball.
How bad can I be?
Yeah.
But I do think that, I mean, if I had 10 beers and I bowled the game, but if I had no beers and I bowled, I think I'd shoot the same thing. I mean,
that's the problem with bowling.
If you gave me, but try to do that with golf or even shooting hoops, I mean, you would, to me, at least you'd see a precipitous, I might have to try that with golf, given all my golf issues.
Wait, what's that say up there? It's a bell curve?
It's a bell curve. Like three or four beers, you get to the peak. It's kind of like with darts or pool, same kind of sports. Get to that peak, but after that fourth or fifth beer, you're throwing the dart against the other wall or the bowling ball's in the other lane. It's like a bell curve goes up and then it slowly goes down.
I would say.
I don't think I've ever. Cracked 170.
Yeah, no, but that, I mean, 170 is a solid score. If you gave me 2 or 3 games to, you know,
get the bearings,
get a
back,
little rust off there, no beers, just to see what I could shoot, or a couple beers.
No, definitely a couple beers.
Yeah, I'd probably be in the neighborhood of 170-ish, you know. I was over 2 twice.
Nice.
I was okay. I was okay. But I couldn't spin the ball naturally.
Yeah. See, like, I had to, if I didn't aim right from the jump, it wasn't getting anywhere close. Because I couldn't do that whole, like, circle back around and
which means
smack it from the side.
Certain spares you're not going to get
No chance.
Yeah. I mean, anybody could throw it
somewhere. Unless it was dumbass luck.
Yeah, in the middle.
Unless it was dumbass luck and I hit it hard enough that it ricocheted.
Do you know what 3 strikes in a row is? Do you know what that is? What the terminology is for that? Santa knows. Look at Santa. You don't know.
I got one of them this weekend.
Wait, did you just say goose?
Yeah.
Close. Turkey.
Turkey. Uh-huh.
I got one of them this weekend.
I should have known that.
Why would you say an animal, though? That's actually, you could have said anything.
Because everything is an animal. You get a
bird, an eagle. That's true.
Albatross.
That's true. That's true. Santa, wait, Santa's trying to tell the world that he got a turkey this weekend. So let's give him, you know.
Go ahead, Sam, come on up to the stage, get your medal.
No, that's it. That's the story. I got a turkey. I got three strikes in a row. That's my story. Great story.
All I heard about was
bowling?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where'd you go?
Chelsea Piers.
Really?
Yeah, it's a fun little place.
Yeah, D-Cell, no, I've been there. It is a good spot.
D-Cell knows.
Knows what?
I just asked. In bowling. I was just clarifying.
Meanwhile, all he did was complain about how sick he was this weekend and how it rained this weekend and how miserable he was. Of course, he managed to take off Thursday and Friday.
No, I wasn't sick. Well, I had to go to the Statue of Liberty. It was monsoon outside. It was really nice, but soaked. Soaked.
That sounds fun.
That doesn't sound fun.
Ugh. Last time I went to the Statue of Liberty, and we'll get to inbounds, out of bounds in a second, was when I was a camp counselor in day camp. And I literally told the kids, they were, as a parent now, this is horrifying to hear, they were like 11 and 12, so they were like the oldest in the camp. So I knew that they weren't going to, well, I hoped that they weren't going to do anything crazy. I was like, just meet me in 5 hours. Meet me at the dock. I just like, let them go for 5 hours. All right, you ready for inbounds, out of bounds? Thank God they all came back, by the way. Thank God.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Wow.
That's out of bounds.
That is out of bounds. That's way out of bounds.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Wow.
That's anything can happen in sports, and that's often does. What's right, what's wrong, and who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now.
Tiki and Tierney. All right, Tiki. OTAs began. A couple of stars looking for new deals, trying to get paid, noticeably absent, including Pittsburgh star Le'Veon Bell and Rams D-tag. Would you pay Aaron Donald? This is just stupidity, please. He wants to get paid as well. Now, Bell wants to be paid like a top-end receiver. Not going to happen. While Donald, the reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year, is currently the 30th. Listen to this. The 30th highest paid, not defensive player.
Yeah.
The 30th paid. Highest defensive tackle. How the hell is that possible? Wow. New Rams teammate Marcus Peters had some advice for his new employer.
Hey, man, pay the man.
You got to love that.
I mean, you win the MVP, man. Come on now.
Man, he sounds like Ice Cube. like Ice Cube.
Doesn't look like him.
No, he looks a little bit like Shannon Sharp there. A little bit, right?
Yeah.
Looks like Aaron Donald, because it is Aaron Donald. In or out, Donald is more valuable to the Rams than Bell is to the Steelers.
This was hard, man. I ultimately said out of bounds because I'm thinking in short term rather than long term.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm thinking about the 2018 season with the Pittsburgh Steelers still having Ben Roethlisberger playing at a decently high level, and A.B., Antonio Brown, still balling. You got some other pieces around there. Le'Veon Bell needs to be healthy for them to get back to where they were in advance.
Mm-hmm.
But in the long term, it's probably – sometimes I'm out of bounds here. But in the long term, it's probably Donald, but I'm taking a short-term mentality and saying Le'Veon Bell's more valuable.
Okay, I'm going to say out of bounds here. I'm going to say Le'Veon Bell as well. And, you know, by the way, just as a side note, I mean I don't know if I'm loving Marcus Peters. If I'm the Rams, I mean, can you lay out? Yeah. Can you let us handle our business for you? You've been here for 2 minutes.
Exactly.
Let us figure out what the hell we're going to do with this guy.
You're right.
This guy's chiming in on very important business. All he had to say was, hey, he's a star. He'll get paid when it's time. But, I mean, you know, whatever. All right. Aaron Donald is, he's incredible. Mm-hmm. But there's just something to me. Maybe because it's easier for me to quantify as somebody who didn't play.
Yep.
I could just watch a game, and I could see what Le'Veon Bell does and how it really changes everything. Not that I can't see that on the interior line, but it's not as noticeable for somebody who didn't play. But I will say this, that Pro Football Focus, which is phenomenal, they grade out all the players, obviously. Aaron Donald, again, was the highest-graded defensive player by far.
Yeah.
So the metrics say that we should be saying inbounds, but we're going to buck the trend, and at least short-term, we're going to say out of bounds. So we're on the same page with this.
Are you in or are you out?
Okay, Teak, reports say that the Dallas Mavericks, who finished with the third worst record in the league and landed the number 5 pick overall, will target big men like Boogie Cousins, maybe DeAndre Jordan, maybe Julius Randle as well. Free agency this summer is coming up, as we know, and they need somebody to team up with Dennis Smith Jr., and we know that Dirk obviously is committed to play one more year, although he's on his last leg, with all due respect. In or out, the Mavericks should try to sign a high-priced big man to do a long-term deal this offseason.
I was reading this and thinking, man, Samter's trying to do it. Maybe it was D-Cell. Samter's trying to make this a trick question because we know what the Dallas Mavericks have been doing over the last couple of years.
Losing.
It's just tanking and losing. Mark Cuban got fined for saying that they were doing so. So to sign an aged vet like Boogie Cousins or DeAndre
Jordan.
He's
not that old.
I mean, old enough. Mm. If you're tanking, you want to go get the next big stud coming out of college and build like the 76ers did. You're not going to go get a guy who's been in the game for five or six years and have issues or limitations like DeAndre Jordan. Julius Randle might be a different story here, but
I'm saying
out of bounds. Because if you're gonna go get a big man to pair with some of these young players that you have coming in, go get somebody who's coming out of school and you can grow with, not someone who has baggage already.
This was a tricky one. The wording was part of it, but also just the situation. I'm going to say out of bounds. Let me give you my answer first of all. Out of bounds. Now, the one thing you want to guard against, like somebody like Dennis Smith Jr., you don't want him to be in his third and fourth year and not having played a meaningful game.
Yep.
You want to get him to the playoffs as soon as possible.
Yep.
And obviously, you don't start adding to the roster, you're not going to get there because you're miles behind. However, I say out of bounds because, they were 30th in payroll this season, dead last, or actually first in a favorable way.
Yeah.
Most cap space. And next year, they're 28th. So they've got a lot of money. But you don't just burn it. That's how a bad team stays bad, or an average team gets maybe marginally better, but nothing in terms of big prospects. It doesn't change the bottom line. They don't have a lot of guys making big money. Wes Matthews is making $18 million next season, expiring deal. Harrison Barnes is making 24 and then 25, and that 25 is a player option. So there's some room. I don't like the way it's worded when Mike says just to sign a high-priced big man. No, sign somebody that's going to make your team better, a 3-and-D guy, not just necessarily a space eater or a guy with an antiquated skill set, maybe like DeAndre Jordan. My answer is out of bounds, but they need to start changing stuff up because they've been terrible.
Are you in or are you out?
Okay, the Texas Rangers, I guess we'll stay in the state of Texas here. The Rangers have lost three straight. They're 18-31 on the season. Already 12.5 out in the American League West. That's a big number. Their GM, John Daniels, who we've had on the show before, spoke out about the team's struggle, saying, quote, "When we took the approach we took this offseason, and on top of that, you've got the number of injuries that we've got, I'm not sitting here trying to blame the coaching staff for personnel issues like that." Well, aside from the fact that it's a run-on sentence with about three or four different thoughts. In or out, I know what he meant. Daniels' comments about the team's approach to building the team are an admission of tanking. In or out?
I don't think this is out of bounds. I don't think he's admitting tanking. I think he's saying that we knew baseball went through this weird, anti-signing of vets this offseason. You saw all these guys that were sitting unsigned for a long time. And so I think that you get caught when you do that, not being able to go after some of the best players. And then when you get caught and your season starts, you don't have any, you're just hoping your farm system comes up. So I think he's just stating the obvious, but in a very I don't want to, get fined by saying that we're actually tanking kind of way. That's why it was a run-on sentence.
It's funny. I don't look at this. I don't see the Rangers tanking at all. I didn't think that they were trying to tank before the season. And I just think it's a refreshingly candid look at who they are. And they got a lot of, I was watching them last night against the Yankees. They got a lot of swing and miss guys. Gallo's hitting 201 again. He strikes out every single night, twice it seems like. They do have some injuries. Beltre's banged up. Obviously, Andrus is hurt as well. I just think if you know baseball, you know that they cannot trot out that team six times a week and win more than once or twice. They just don't have the horses. So I think he's speaking to us in fact, that he's not trying to talk down to us. We know that they're not that good, and that's kind of what he's saying. And I like that he exonerates the coaching. It's not their fault. It's fair. I have no problem with what he said. I'm going to say out of bounds pertaining to tanking.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, see a little college football. That was good with that. Michigan head man Jim Harbaugh has a unique approach, we know this, to recruiting and team building. Various trips around the world and the country. Now, a couple of years ago, the team took a trip to Italy and recently just returned from France. We saw that they went to Normandy and everything historically was incredible. And now the team announced they're going to go to South Africa in 2019. Man, in or out, these international trips are greatly beneficial to Michigan, both in recruiting and on and off the field.
I'm saying out of bounds in the simple. If I was on the team, I'm loving it. I definitely want to go. But if I'm a kid sitting in high school and you're talking to me not about the NFL, you're talking about, oh, we're going to go to South Africa. Okay, whatever, coach. And if it's on the field, what does it do for on the field? You do on the field, Jim Harbaugh. You're the X's and O's guy. I'm saying out of bounds. I'm not saying they're not cool, and I wouldn't want to do them.
Yep.
But it has nothing to do with recruiting or on the field.
It's funny. We're thinking the same thing. Anything for a young, impressionable mind, yeah. You know, whether it's a male or female student athlete, anything that, you know, forces you to be introspective. I mean, that's just a great thing. It's a great asset. It's a great tool. And his toolbox is quite wide, and there's a lot of great things in there. But, you know, Lloyd Carr, to my knowledge, when they went 12-0 back in 97 and they won the Rose Bowl, were they bouncing around the outside of the country?
Nope.
They were probably grinding out 2-a-days, hitting the crap out of each other and winning games. So beating Ohio State, by the way, and Michigan State along the way.
Did meeting the Pope help Wilton Spate be a better quarterback? No.
Well, maybe the Pope was just kicking it down. Maybe he was very busy.
Maybe.
And he said, I'll get to Spates when I actually have time, and maybe we'll see that at some point, I don't know, down the road. But the answer is no.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Tiki and Tierney.
Good questions. That was good stuff. Yeah. Okay, we'll get to these phone calls. I see you hanging. We see you hanging. I promise we'll hit you. 855-212-4227. The overstated intelligence of LeBron's game. And wow, the Timberwolves going to trade Carl Anthony Towns. You crazy?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.